A prime piece of meat from my head to my feet. I was a sacrificial lamb, all part of the plan. They sacrificed me like all the rest. Held me up to display my distress. I was a prime suspect in a bootleg investigation of prime neglect to my needs and all my blood. A prime suspect when I held my suspicions. A prime suspect when I held my tongue. I was a prime suspect.
Right. Welcome, ladies, gentlemen, slaves of the global plantation. The Vinnie Eastwood Show is bad news. It's like the news, but worse. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't enjoy it. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? The Vinnie Eastwood Show, where the only thing worse than living in a high-tech global police state run by child trafficking Satanists is Vinnie's jokes. And my very special guest is Irene Kalinowski, the cervix with a smile, is the today of today. She's a professional as hell midwife. So what we've got going on here today is a little bit of a recap about what is midwifery and Irene's story a little bit, but also more the fact that we've got a little baby here in New Zealand at the moment, little baby Will. And the mother of little baby Will is actually a trained midwife, and I believe trained by Irene. Is that correct?
Well, Sam was one of my students for a long time, you know, a long, long time ago. I mean, I'm going back 20 years now. She's just an awesome, awesome, loving woman that has stood up for women and their voices and given them choice for all the years of her practice. You know, it's very sad that it's not working for her right now as a consumer.
Right. So can we, you've got a little bit of background noise there. Do you want to put on a pair of headphones or something of that nature? And also your camera's a little bit low.
I can't see myself, so... Is that better?
Much better.
All right.
Okay.
I've got to dash to the bedroom to get the earphones, right, but there's no cervixes in there.
All right. This, like a midwife mobile phone telecommunication company era, we have no cervix at the moment, ladies and gentlemen. We're in a no cervix area. So the whole idea that... we have unjabbed midwives and things like that being mandated out of the job, for some people might be like, oh yeah, of course, you've got to do everything that the government tells you. Why wouldn't you do everything the government tells you without question? You know, that kind of thing. And the answer is, of course, because I'm not an idiot. And the problem with obeying government mandates without question is because you can easily be led into tyranny. And so we've got Irene here, who is an unjabbed midwife, and thank you very much for being here. So without, as they say in Nazi Germany, further ado, would you be able to tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do?
Well, I've been a midwife for 42 years, Vinny.
Yeah.
And just get you on there. So I've been through many, many continents. I never planned to be a midwife. It kind of found me. I've had lots of jobs, from working behind bars, catering for weddings, working in offices. And one day my sister said, stop being silly, you need to get into nursing and midwifery. So a magazine fell out and there I was doing my training. a long time ago in Yorkshire, England. But that journey comes from, I think my grandmother was the village baby catcher in Poland. She birthed 13 babies. She was the traditional midwife. My mother birthed four of us at home, two in Poland. The ironic thing is, like, oh, had home births, but mother was working in Poland, actually. She was carrying the two pails of water on her shoulders at 38, 39 weeks pregnant. Went into labour, stopped on the hill and caught my sister and carried her home in the bucket. So, you know, so I've been brought up around families and births and things like that. So knowing how birth should be, seeing the birthing at home. But when I went to do my training in the hospital, it was a completely different environment. You know, women were tied to machines. It was a very invasive environment. And I sometimes used to think women might do better if they're delivered on the lifts before they got to the hospital. So I was kind of taken aback. I've seen so many women with postpartum depression. Yeah, women separated from babies. So at a very young age, I was 22 and decided that, I didn't decide, it just came, you know, upon me to be able to want to do something different. So I had to get experience and learn a lot more about birth and, you know, women and different cultures. So I found myself in Saudi Arabia and the Middle East for 6 years. And as it would have it, it was like you go there and you're opening hospitals because they told you it was functioning. So we started hospitals from scratch. And in those early days, the women were Bedouin. They came from the desert and they were driving them to birth in the hospital, right? So these women could birth. I mean, babies would arrive on the way. They brought their families with them. They had something like almost a 90% normal birth rate. We didn't need our special units or have to give them drugs or anything like that. They taught me so much about birth, yeah? And then I went, so I traveled from there. I went to Bahrain, you know, it was a oil refinery hospital, looking after that one for 2 years. And then I found myself in Oman setting up another hospital. And again, teaching midwives and interviewing midwives from all around the world about their training. And I was realizing that it was very, very much of a medical model of care. So I landed myself back in the UK and found the C-section rates were going very, very high. They were 25%. Baby units were being built everywhere. And yet I still managed to work in standalone midwifery units where we had like 90% normal birth. But when you went into the bigger hospitals, the C-section rates were 25, 30%. And I could just see it getting more and more medicalized. I came to New Zealand in 1995, and at that time, the midwifery just started here. I think it got in 89 to get its, it's the only country in the world where midwifery has its own autonomy, well, supposed to have. And I was 20 years, I started off in the hospitals and realized all the intervention rates were here. So I went out into independent practice, I became a homeopath, started working with women mind-body connection and found that it's possible for 95% of women to have normal births with the right preventative care. So my holistic mindset started there. And then in 2015, for 20 years, I'd worked without any sickness, not a day off. I was also helping the Polish Association, so I became their president and running that, so doing the swinging the two things, learning about communities, integrating them. But what I found on the midwifery side is that the home births were getting less, and we were losing really good midwives. And I went through, I think, one complaint, which was an out-of-the-box scenario. It wasn't my fault, but the digging took 3 years, and I ended up suicidal. And I ended up on a vision. I says, how can it be so cruel to midwives? So I interviewed a lot of midwives, and I wrote the books, The Heart and Soul of Midwifery, with Woman of midwife with me in respect for midwifery and how we have lost the soul or the caring in our system. So I wrote the truth. And from that day on, I kind of got bullied. You know, I felt strongly they wanted me out of the system. I stood up to the system. I won the case. But then I went to China for 5 years to get away with to get away from the system. You know, my heart was hating New Zealand, but I realized once I'd gone away and reflected, it wasn't the country, because I love the country. I've cared for more than maybe 40 different cultures in New Zealand. But when I got, so I went to China and realized it, you know, it was the system. I've supported midwives with their complaints, but, you know, to see midwives punitively punished for things that could be resolved in mediation, especially if they use tikanga in their mediation processes. But you realize it's become a corporation, a business. And a lot of these midwives are ending up $40,000 in debt through lawyers' fees. You know, and they're ending up bankrupt just about for simple things that can be resolved because we're human. So, you know, so I've contested them, and then we can, maybe I was in China, and I think if I could have said I've laughed more than I've cried when you see the birth there and how commercial it was in the big cities, you know, they would tell pregnant women they were unhealthy, they needed oxygen, so they would charge them 10 yuan to stick an oxygen cylinder up their, oxygen up their nose, and another 20 yuan to put them on the monitors. And separating, not allowing families into birthing units, you know. So I worked with an amazing woman called Meng Shu, and we set up the modern maternity service system, and we went north, south, east, west, and China, reducing C-section rates, teaching obstetricians about normal birth, putting water birth rooms into hospitals. And we did some incredible things. I met obstetricians from around the world. I met two beautiful ones from Brazil, Ricardo Herbert Jones, who has done a lot of pioneering for changing the face of childbirth to representing women. Edson Burgess de Souza, he's at the Sophia Feldman Hospital in Brazil. They have a very women-centered hospitals, and even though Edson is quite young and he has a you know, he has the medical mindset, he's very holistic, and he's doing so much to move into a preventative model of care. From that, I lecture internationally. I'm with Lilly Excellence, and we're setting up an education platform on integrated care, holistic, moving out of the system of care that is not a medical model where you just do tests, you watch. If the tests get abnormal, you refer in to the hospitals, then they give drugs. So that's a system where it's not preventative. So we've taken that model away. I used COVID in China to write 5 midwifery textbooks, which are with the publishers now in Dubai, to be released as the framework for this course. So we're just waiting funding, and we'll be teaching midwives around the world a new integrated model of care. So in China, when COVID started, let's have a look at that. So in China, when COVID set out, I was in Qingdao, actually. It's on the East Coast. It's not far from Taiwan.
This is where people in China are a lot very browbeaten. That's why they've got their chin down. But go ahead.
Yeah. So what happened was, is that when COVID came out, all these pictures were happening on the TV screens and, you know, about this dangerous virus. But I was in touch with like maybe 1,000 health professionals across the country. And in conversation, they didn't have COVID. There was no COVID. Yeah. So I said, well, this is absolutely crazy, because I've worked, you know, as a nurse in high-risk units with infectious diseases, and we've never ever treated infectious disease like that before. You've never isolated an entire country. you couldn't isolate all the stuff in the hospital if one person had an infectious disease. It just didn't make sense. So we lost our jobs. We couldn't work. We couldn't travel across China because they started to block the flights, even though there was a bit more freedom. The COVID restrictions in China were nowhere near as bad as what we had in New Zealand. I think New Zealand was worse than China. You know, we did wear a mask. They took a temperature if you left the apartment building and you went into the supermarkets. But even in the supermarkets, they couldn't hold 5 meters distance, yeah, or 5 foot distance, because there's so many people. You just couldn't do it. And like, I walked into the supermarket and this woman's there with her gloves on and her facial stuff on, and she looked like somebody from outer Mars. And yet, you know, the people had their masks on in all different places. There was no strict thing. As long as you had a mask, they didn't care where it was situated. And we had to queue for vegetables because they weighed them there. So there was a queue for like 2 hours, and we were stood cramped shoulder to shoulder waiting to get the veggies done. But even there, you know, people are opening the plastic bags, sliding the masks out, licking them, touching the vegetables for fresh ones. And there was no COVID in Qingdao. You know, there was nothing there. They didn't have any cases there, even up to the time I left. So it was crazy. So then when we left, we were coming back to New Zealand. It cost us a lot of money. Very difficult to get your money out of China, yeah, and in. I mean, bringing money in to even pay for my shipment, I had to bring the money in, declare where it came from, but then I couldn't pay from my bank account because I was a foreigner, so I had to take the cash out and give it to a Chinese colleague in cash to pay for things. You know, you know, New Zealand need to think about, you know, this managing your funds to be trapped in a country and you can't get your money out and you're monitored as to where it goes was just crazy. So anyhow, we traveled down, yeah, so on the train from Qingdao down to Shanghai because we were flying out. Now, remember, there's no COVID cases. We're on the train, so we're not wearing masks on the train. Nobody's got COVID or signs or symptoms of it. But then they put us on an aeroplane with lots of different cultures from the Philippines and everywhere else where the COVID cases were high. So if there was one, they were putting us at risk and bringing it into New Zealand. Unbelievable.
And what's been happening in New Zealand since the midwives have been, basically mandated out of the job? Because when we were looking for one, that was just like so much shortages. And you said that the shortages are not like small shortages. Like these are big shortfalls that we're looking at the moment.
If you can go back to a Stuff News New Zealand article just before the mandate started, and it already was declaring there was a 400, we were lacking 400 midwives, which is quite a lot for the population we've got here. So if you think there was about 400 midwives mandated out, and on top of that, you've got the older midwives that were fed up with the system and they just decided to take early retirement. So I'd say we'd be lacking about 1,000 plus midwives across the country.
We've got a Stuff article up here now. Technical error blamed for 364 midwives pay issues as some consider leaving profession. That was in 2022. All right, that's the break music, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back right after the break. My guest is the wonderful midwife Irene Kalinowski, author of My Body, My Baby, which you can get on Amazon. Back in just a moment. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting on RBN Republic vinnieeastwoodbroadcasting.org, and you can check out my website vinnieeastwood.com, ladies and gentlemen. Please do, and check out the many, many years of shows that we've done there. I just got a Facebook reminder today of 1 week that we did back in the day with five big guests, a lot of which I can't even remember the name of because it was so long ago. Back in the day, we had, what was it, this was 9 years ago, Thomas Sheridan, Tom Filer, who's a guy working on Wall Street, and Mo Bedard, a guy talking about the Sword of Truth, Karen Hudez, who is a World Bank whistleblower, and we had, what was it? And we had a great show by me talking about how to wake up New Zealand. So, yeah, guys, been going for a very, very long time with big guests and big topics. So please go to vinnieeastwood.com and go to that show archives page and check it out. So my very special guest today is the lovely Irene. And I think you've muted Irene there, actually. Got to press the little unmute button there. There we
okay,
go. Welcome back. All right. So, and I wanted to get into this because we're talking about unjabbed midwifery in New Zealand, and of course this is reflected around the world, no doubt, because you've come into, well, with your 40 years of experience in the field, you've come into a lot of insider knowledge about how hospitals work, how babies are really supposed to be born, and why that process, if it's followed correctly, can have really healthy, happy babies. But with the medical interventionism that we have kind of carte blanche all over the place at the moment, that's not happening quite so often.
Absolutely not. So I was saying that I estimate we're about 1,000 midwives down just in this country, but it's global. You know, there are shortages of midwives around the world. Childbirth's a very sacred and spiritual event, and the way babies are born, or the lack of connectedness prenatally, has a huge impact on that child's future life. If the baby's traumatized, it's going to grow up traumatized, and this has a huge impact on society as a whole. That you see a huge difference between the home birth babies that have had no interventions to the ones born in hospital with the interventions, because they interfere with all the natural processes. The baby can't do its beautiful dance to enter the world. Babies come in their own times. You can't speed them up before they're ready. We have to have a lot of patience. So we, you know, when women are empowered and they understand and they're educated about their body and the entire process, they do well, and there's no fear in the birth unit. What is happening is that the prenatal education is not really mind-body connected. It's not always spiritual and doesn't give the how to prevent the problems. So I'm going to say at this point, I identify this. A lot of women are having to free birth because they can't find midwives, okay? But then there's that lack of education, which can lead to problems down the track if they can't get the knowledge. So I work with Tiamara Williams, and for all the women and families around the world or whatever, if you want that free prenatal education, you can sign into freedom.me and go into the groups and find My Body, My Baby. And I've loaded all the videos and information that they need for self-care. I think it's vital at this point that they have access to it. There's no payment for this. They can donate a little, which will go to helping the midwife projects and supporting midwives in New Zealand going through this trauma of witch hunts and etc. So they can log into that and get all that information they need.
That's good. Now, Tiamara is also helping us with the River of Lies, the New Zealand Scamdemic investigative documentary. I want to thank her for that. People can go and check that out at riveroflies.co.nz, and they are still looking for donations in order to finish that documentary. As am I, ladies and gentlemen. This is a listener-supported broadcast, and we do have two sponsors, HoldenHealthCare.com, emphasis on the care. David Holden's helping me out with my liver issues and adrenal glands. Yeah, see, it's the thing about doing talk radio. Everybody's like on coffee and stuff like that, and unfortunately, yeah, your body can't just keep taking coffee. It eventually burns out and tires of it. So yeah, that's where I'm at the moment, ladies and gentlemen. That's why I'm not quite so energetic and speaking quite so fluently. Yes. All right, so have we got some music in the background there? I don't think so. All right, no. What was happening is in New Zealand, a whole bunch of people have been mandated out of their jobs in various ways, shapes, and form. And more recently, we've got Baby Will, who is trying to get himself a heart transplant or heart surgery or something like that. And his parents are struggling to get the doctors to agree to give him unjabbed blood. Can you tell people a little bit about that?
Well, I can't understand where the problem is. Now, I'm going to go back to China and other countries I've worked in where there is not enough blood donors. And all the families donate their own blood. So what is the problem? They choose their family members to donate the blood in China. If they can do it in China, they can do it in New Zealand.
Well, you know, perhaps China's a lot less communist than New Zealand is.
Well, actually, having lived there, I'm going to say, yes, it was. I was writing articles for the foreigners magazines out there on health. And, you know, even in the, they weren't as severe. We could get out. We got to clubs. We got out to do sailing on the yachts. We weren't stopped from absolutely everything like they tried to do here. They didn't close down the Chinese traditional medicine hospitals like they shut down all the health shops here, the natural health shop.
Oh, hold on a second, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to break. We'll be right back. My very special guest, Irene Kalinowski, over here. Back in just a moment, folks. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Please check out our sponsors on the website, vinnieeastwood.com. I was going to say vinnieeastwood.com. I'm like, have I turned myself into Australian all of a sudden? I don't know. Anyway, HoldenHealthCare.com and Reopen.nz are our very special sponsors. HoldenHealthCare.com specializes with hard-to-treat cases and in some cases is actually able to get people to go into remission from carcinogenic purposes. Now, and Reopen.nz is an unjabbed, pro-choice, anti-mandate group of businesses and stuff like that. So if you're in New Zealand and you have a business here, go to Reopen.nz and pop them on there. We're broadcasting live proudly on Republic Broadcasting Network in the good old US of Austin, Texas. And thank you very much for giving me the opportunity, guys, to come on the network. I've been off of American radio for, like, I don't know, 5 years or something like that, and doing stuff without breaks, man, that's exhausting, honestly. So my very special guest is the wonderful Irene Kalinowski, author of My Body, My Baby. You can see that here on screen as well. Welcome back, Irene.
Well, I just want to go back to Sam's situation, because I understand how she's actually feeling, because our health systems have become cold and heartless. I understand, you know, how they're following protocols and policies and afraid to step out of them. I've just been through it myself with surgery. I've been coerced, bullied, forced to wear a mask. My husband followed after my and refused surgical treatment unless I cooperated. And my husband got pneumonia and they kidnapped him from me. I didn't see him for 2 days. Gave him drugs against consent. And we discharged ourselves from that hospital here. And I gave him, fortunately the community got us ivermectin and homeopathy, and he recovered very quickly. But they were giving him tranquilizers he didn't need, weren't feeding him well, his urine dehydrated. I thought I was going to lose him. So I can understand exactly what Sam's going through when there's no heart in the system.
Particularly if you need heart surgery.
Heart surgery.
You know, the irony of it. And of course, I think there's a lot of apathy in this country. A lot of people, they'll see a baby, they're a really innocent little child who desperately needs surgery and won't be given jabbed blood because of all of the dangers that are associated with it, with that new documentary, what was it, Died Suddenly, I believe it was. And seeing what's in people's blood, like it's like black sand and these giant growths of like white snake-like things. It's just like, I really don't want that in my baby. And they're like, oh, but you got to. We're not going to give you any other choice. Wait, hold on a second. I've got all the donors here, all right? And we've already got them all lined up. I mean, do you guys not know how to operate a needle? You know, do you need more medical training or something of that nature in order to give somebody a transfusion or to take donations all of a sudden? It's basically, I found out, and I'll say this like very regularly on the show, when I found out that my liver was packing it in and having real problems and things like that, I found out that one of the interesting symptoms of having a problematic liver is apathy. And you know what causes that? It's like carbs and alcohol and cigarettes and coffee, right? Kind of like the sort of thing that everybody has all the time, and sugar, you know, like that kind of thing. So my theory is, this is my conspiracy theory. I've come up with two conspiracy theories in my life of my own design. And this one is that the food supply and the culture have been deliberately hijacked in such a way to make people have almost no choice but to do something that will damage their liver and make them apathetic. Why? Because what can you do with an apathetic population? Anything you damn well please. Just my theory. I could be wrong. But in either case, we are dealing with it in mass along the lines of the medical field in particular. And of course, if you look at the statistics of it, the leading cause of death, if you combine the malpractice and the regular overdoses of prescribed drugs and so on and so forth, the leading cause of death in New Zealand is the New Zealand medical system. Okay? It's like, yeah, I'm going to these people for my health. Oh, yeah? Do you have convicted sex offenders to babysit your children as well, bro? You know, so the tomorrow, I think, is the High Court hearing for Baby Sam's case. And so a lot of people are going to be out there, you know, Counterspin and Liz Gunn and a number of the other people in this country who only have just popped up on the scene, really, in the last year or two. I've been doing this for 15 years. They've done it the last 2 years, and now they've got huge platforms and masses of followers and sponsorship and all of this kind of thing. And it's really, really good to see at least somebody is getting something like that going, because there's a lot of people out there who do need coverage, who do need help and do need support, and I can't do it. Mainly because I got arrested and demonetized and deplatformed, but not necessarily in that order. So yeah, I'd like to thank you very much, Irene, for coming on the show and giving us access to some of your knowledge on this case. So can you explain any more about the Sam case, or would you like to give us into the nitty-gritty of midwifery?
Sam's case has got what you call mitral stenosis, so it's the narrowing of the aorta, which is probably a small piece that they can fix. I've seen it once before, and you know, the surgery is very, very successful, and the surgeons are absolutely brilliant here in New Zealand. Yeah, so to decline this opportunity for, you know, to decline selecting the blood that she wants for that baby, which is her right, but even more so, it's heartbreaking to think they can take that baby away. Are trying to take the baby away from her, for goodness sake. She's a professional, she's knowledge, she's research, she's a responsible woman. You know, where are we going to if the country allows this to happen? You know, people need to really stand up, because it could be their child. How would they feel if this was the case? And blood transfusions are not a light thing to take. You know, we're worried about, you know, what's in the blood, so we should be more concerned about what blood is being given to our babies. Okay, now I was in the UK. I had surgery in 1980, I think it was, and my father turned up at this private hospital with cut flowers. Well, nobody ever buys cut flowers in my family. They go for funerals. And I learned later that they'd mixed my blood up in this private hospital. So I've been very, very more cautious, because I got very sick from it. So Sam's in her right to know what's going into her baby and what type of blood is going in there. It's ridiculous that they're, you know, creating all this nonsense for something that can be fixed in 2 minutes. in a decision, yes, we're going to do this. There's nothing holding them back other than control. I've seen that control with other parents, babies who've refused to have a blood sugar test, for example. I've been an advocate for that, where they've said, well, you'll put this baby at danger if you don't take this consent, and that baby is the ward of our court, and we've got the right to take this baby from you. This is what I've dealt with in the past. So our system needs to wake up to say it's breaching every human rights.
It really is. And, well, let's think about this as well, because it's not just children who are needing unjabbed blood. If you just have an accident or something like that, and you get rushed to hospital and they need to commit surgery on you right then and there, otherwise you're going to bleed out and die, and then they give you jab blood, and then you die later anyway of a giant blood clot, you know, just all right, and you're dead. That's the thing that's kind of a bit concerning, larger than this, because look, people need to get under the radar on this kind of thing. It's like, stay below the radar, don't paint a target on your back or whatever. And I'm kind of like thinking to myself, okay, they're committing genocide against the population of the world. Okay, and so people come up and they go, oh, why would they do this? And why would they do that? Did you consider that they're psychopaths committing genocide? Oh, you know, it makes sense. Everybody. Yeah, see, you're a lot more comforted now, aren't you? No confusion. Good.
I know that we have to accept that we are going through a war. This is a genocide war, and it's been going on for hundreds of years, okay? And what I saw in the UK was in 1980, I was working in midwifery-led units. We had 90% normal birth. We had a small baby unit. We only had 6 cots for 3,000 births. Six, imagine, six special care cots for 3,000 births. We didn't need any more. And maybe one centre for the entire of the UK or that area that was never full for neonatal. We did the same in Saudi. I went to Saudi in 1980 and it was the same thing. We did 3,000 births and we had 6 special care cots, which were never full. So I had to ask, when I went back to the UK, why were they building these big neonatal units all over the country suddenly? What was making that happen? We didn't see a lot of preterm births then. Oh, they're going to blame the woman. They're going to blame the diet. Well, actually, I went back and I looked, what happened in 1979? They brought out the hepatitis B vaccination, the influenza vaccination, the tetanus vaccination. They were giving it to pregnant women. Now, I haven't got the research on this, but, you know, I've got a very creative mindset and I've always been brought up to look outside the box. So I would like someone like Judy Moscovich or someone else to look at that and then go look at what is in those jabs, what's in them. People don't ask what is in them. You know, when I, under ethics, if I have to give a drug, if I have to give pethidine at a birth, I know that that drug stays in that body for 24 hours. I know what's in it. I give that information to the woman before you give the jab. Yeah, this is ethics. This is, I would have lost my license before COVID if I didn't do that. And most claims through Health and Disabilities Commission is because of the lack of informed consent. So where's it gone? And we have an information request to this government to say that when did informed consent be abolished? And it hasn't. It still stands. So they're breaching every law under the sun. Okay. Whether you're a living woman, they're breaching it under the natural laws and divine laws. And if you're a dead entity and your birth certificate's somewhere else, they're breaching their own laws. And I think we have to understand what the law and the law is and stand up for our rights, because we have rights. And the people of the country need to stand up too, especially to support Sam right now. She needs each and every one of us more than anything.
It's coming down to the point where people need to really stand up behind people that just get this media attention behind them, all right? And I thought What was very good about Liz Gunn's work there on this case is that she encouraged everybody to call the media and gave everybody their contact details, and then encouraged everybody to email all the MPs and then gave all their contact details and things of that nature, so that all of a sudden the media and the members of parliament in this country were being just overloaded with people saying, you've got to cover this case, you've got to look at this, you've got to do something about this, that kind of thing. So this is what Dr. Rima Labo from the Natural Solutions Foundation told me, is that the way that you've got power is to get a whole bunch of people emailing them at the same time saying, don't you dare.
Absolutely. I think that what we did through this COVID situation, going back to having the paper chase so we can expose their crimes, is I wrote to the Midwifery Council in October last year and asked them to send me all the information that they've used to make their decisions, because they are there to protect the public. Okay. Minutes of the meetings. I raised my concerns about the shortage of midwives and putting women at risk, you know, but they didn't respond to any of it. But we've got the paper trail. There's a huge, vast amount of it, and these people will pay for their crimes. Judgment Day is coming. You know, the more we have, the more Judgment Day is coming for them. So I've collated every bit of documentation, from being suspended because I'm a danger to the public because I'm not vaccinated, so they've, and I've had to help women. You were saying that there's not enough midwives, and I had to go out and help a woman who was declined care by 80 midwives.
80?
Yeah, it's on the WHC website. She said it was 80. Maybe, I mean...
Did you say that's
what they came to. 80.
And that was on WTF midwives?
that's on the Wakamuningahora Health Council, because they were very proud because the baby's kind of tribal descent. So I just went and sat there because I did a act of duty, okay? I did an act of necessity, which is covered. I'm covered to do that under Section 60, Section 20 of the 1961 Crimes Act as an act of necessity, and it comes under duty of care.
Mm.
Yeah, because I'm covered to, in an emergency, if that emergency care has been there to prevent harm. It's even in the United Nations CEDAW. So they're breaching these crimes, and yet I got threatened by the Ministry of Health $10,000 for doing my act of necessity.
How much did you get fined, like, in terms of you're trying to fight this and how long it's ongoing for?
Well, this is going to be ongoing for a while. I am trying to fight it. I've already put an affidavit into Midwifery Council, which they haven't answered. So I've just put a notice of cure into there. I've highlighted all the crimes they've committed. And I don't think they can get out of it. I don't think they can get out of this paper chase. It might mean going to court. I might not have to go to court because it's an unrebutted affidavit, so it means that it's taken as a judgment because it's a sworn affidavit. So I'm just waiting to hear from that. If need be, I will take it. It has to come on. They have to be seen for their crimes because they've put this entire country at risk by their actions. The mothers and the babies and the stresses that they're creating, and the very thing that they are there is to protect the health of the public and safety.
It doesn't look like they've been doing that for a long, long time. As a journalist, you get cynical. You do. It's part of the job description, and the other part of the job description is to become jaded. All right.
Yeah.
So that's something I think that's happened to you in the course of midwifery in itself, didn't it? Because you start to see how things really are, and it's very difficult for people to pull the wool over your eyes after a while, isn't it?
Well, it is, because they've told me I can't be a midwife. I can't use the name midwife anymore. I can't give any advice. So I can't even go to support a woman. And if I touch a woman, if I just touch the woman's abdomen, I'm creating a crime against the Midwifery Council. The husband can touch the woman. The husband can do a vaginal examination on his wife. But it just doesn't make sense. And you can see where the control's gone. They've taken control, and they're using their acts and their policies above the law, and it's not that way. It's divine law. It comes down to natural law. It comes down to Tikenga. It comes down to Hifakapatanga. Then you've got the government, you've got the Bill of Rights, and then their acts and their policies are right at the bottom of the lifts. But they've done that mirror thing. They've flipped it around like they're God.
Mm.
But when we understand that process, and we the people can take that back.
We can take that back.
We have to take it back. And I have a vision. We're working underneath the scenes to have a new midwifery program You know, my worries, I've got worries for the future because a lot of these, you know, a lot of women have been jabbed. We've got infertility. The birth rates are going to drop. Our hospitals are not providing the care. I mean, they've got nurses in there and experienced people in there. They've got the staff in the hospitals have taken the jabberidoo and their immune systems are all, can I say the F word?
No, you can't. Not on New Year's Talk Radio, I'm afraid.
I don't normally swear, but...
Well, it was the other thing as well, because it's like, for example, I can't show breasts on this show either. And the thing is, if I just say to you, ladies and gentlemen, a large pair of breasts, you've got them in your head already, right? So if we say the F word, you already know, and it's in your head anyway. So, you know, if we just do it anyway and just show you the boobies or say the F word, you know, we're cutting out the middleman, as it were. But you know, we still have to abide by the broadcasting standards. So regardless, I just wanted to clarify that point. And also, did you know that swearing releases endorphins, which take away your pain? Why do you think people who are frustrated and having difficult lives and things like that swear so commonly, you wonder? All right. Thank you, Irene Kalinowski, author of My Baby, My Body. You can get that on Amazon. Thank you so much for your time. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us. And we will see you again sometime at VinnieEastwood.com.